Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a little bit, and I think you're going to be disappointed in the sound quality. It's a little bit better than two soup cans and a little bit of string connecting to them. Just Tron solo tonight. Randy's indisposed up in Ohio. He will be back soon. I think this is going to be more of a regular occurrence, according to these trap draws here, over the next few weeks into a few months. But pleased to be joined tonight by a gentleman that really, to me, needs no introduction. He's I believe he's number 7 in Los Cinco.
Siete.
Oh, Siete. Okay. Okay. Yes, that's 7, right? Seis is 6. Siete 7. So Siete, yep, in Los Cinco. Okay. And ahead of such luminaries in the world rankings as Hunter Mahan, Tim Herron, Fred Couples, Jeev Milka Singh, Derek Ernst, none other than TK Kelly, joining us from Montreal. TK, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, Tron. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun to talk about some of this stuff and see what we can get into.
So, first of all, I mean, a little bit of culture shock up there, going from Central America to the Caribbean to Canada. Is that a little bit jarring for you?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been telling a lot of people up here in Montreal, I'm used to a language barrier by now, but I at least know enough Spanish to keep my head above water and to order food and kind of get my way around. But once we get to the first couple restaurants up here, I just realized that I have absolutely no idea about any French. I just even feel weird saying bonjour to someone, because I know once they respond to something, I'm just going to stare at them like a deer in the headlights. So
they're pretty good about speaking English up there, though. Like, they'll flip it on and speak better English than you do. Even.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, that's kind of the demoralizing thing. You'll try to say something in French, and then they just immediately flip on the English, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. The toughest part was the first day my phone was being kind of weird and my directions weren't working. So I was trying to have to read these street signs and try to remember where my hotel was and stuff, and trying to read French street signs. It somehow worked out, but I was a little worried there for a little bit.
So kind of backtracking a little bit, you're from Illinois. So you're used to kind of playing golf in the middle part of North America. Albeit a little bit south of there. So you grew up in Illinois, and you went to Ohio State. What brought you to Ohio State? Did you think about going anywhere else, or kind of what was the impetus for going there?
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, the two schools that were my two final decisions were between Ohio State and Illinois, and know a lot of people that went to Illinois. A lot of people wanted me to go to Illinois, and obviously Illinois is an amazing program. The stuff Coach Small's done with that program the last 10 years is nothing short of outstanding, and he's built quite a program there. But I kind of wanted to make a name for myself somewhere else, and Ohio State's obviously an awesome athletic program with history and all the sports, especially golf with Jack Nicklaus going there. So I thought having the opportunity to be an athlete there was a pretty cool chance that I had. So I decided to go for it, and it ended up working out pretty well. And I loved my time there.
Did you ever think about going anywhere south or west, or was it always the Midwest?
I did. I looked at some schools, but, and I went on a visit or two down south. When I went to schools in the Midwest and, you know, meeting people from all over, I like being in the Midwest. I like growing up in the Midwest. I kind of like Midwest people. So I knew it wouldn't be hard for me, or I wouldn't have to adjust anything if I kind of stayed in the Midwest. And honestly, I was used to having the winters off. Sometimes I don't think that's as big of a disadvantage as people make it out to be. I think it's nice to have a little mental break. Sometimes, you know, if you live in Florida or somewhere down south, you feel like you need to always be playing and always be practicing. Yeah. And you know, you can get worn down a little bit. And I think you see that with some kids that get burnt out once they go to college for a couple of years. They've been playing golf year round for 8 years at that point, and they're just 19 years old and they're already starting to get burned out. So I kind of liked having the winters off. Once the fall season was over, you know, you could put the clubs up for a little bit. I mean, we still practiced and worked out a lot, but it's not the, you know, it's a little easier to take time off when it's not 75, 80 degrees every day outside.
I was talking to Robert Streb about that a couple months ago. Just, he lives out in Kansas, practices in a glorified barn or garage there for a couple months. And he's like, man, I love taking six to 8 weeks off and just recharging. And then you feel better, you know, once you get the club back in your hand after a little bit of time off. Was the Scarlet course, was that a factor for you going to Ohio State too? Just having an on-campus, or just, I guess, slightly off-campus, you know, just a dope course to play on a regular basis?
Yeah, it was, I would definitely say it was a factor. We had really nice facilities there, and the whole city of Columbus is just littered with unbelievable golf.
Oh, it's kind
of the, unless you know a lot about golf courses and architecture, it's kind of the forgotten city when it comes to good golf courses. Even just a lot of the, you know, run of the mill average country clubs in Columbus are really solid golf courses. So was definitely an advantage. And the biggest tournament I won as a junior, I won a AJGA at the Scarlet course going into my senior year of college. And that was before I committed anywhere. So it was, definitely some good mojo there. And like, I really liked the course.
It was like manifest destiny then for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. So that's got to be a professional goal, is getting back there to the nationwide championship up at the Scarlet course, you know, kind of in that web tour finals stage of things. But I guess before you get there, was it always the goal to play pro golf? I mean, certainly that's probably a dumb question. but did you always envision yourself having this as the end goal? Or, you know, were you just kind of wanting to see where it took you?
It was honestly the end goal from the time I was pretty young. I played a lot of sports up through middle school and the start of high school. So it's not like I quit everything for golf at a super young age. But I had a pretty good idea that I wanted to see how long or how far I could take golf from a pretty young age. My mom played in college at the University of Tulsa, and they won a national championship when she was there. So
the Hurricane, just the my whole Hurricane, man.
Yeah, exactly. That my whole family's just always been pretty involved with golf in Chicago, and we have just a lot of golf going on in our family. So I was really, I was introduced to it at a young age, and you know, I just kind of fell in love with it when I was super young, and obviously. Like, people always ask me what I think about Tiger Woods and all this stuff, and I don't think I would have fallen in love as much as I did with the game or even be a professional golfer now like I am if it wasn't for Tiger and, you know, just that pizzazz and just that, just what he did for the game when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I mean, I would.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had his book, How I Play Golf, and posters in my room. And so once I saw him doing that stuff and, yeah, it was pretty obvious to me when I was pretty young that I wanted to do it for as long as I could.
I always enjoy and like am kind of invigorated by people who, I was talking to JT Poston on one of the four or five trap draws we've done thus far of just guys who played other sports growing up and didn't just specialize in golf, whether it be golf or baseball or whatever else. Like they kept playing other sports all the way through high school. That was just cool and refreshing. And I think that, you know, you guys always have a better sense of yourselves and a better competitive edge to you.
Yeah. And one of the things I did in high school was my junior year, kind of coming off the fall, I had our spring or our golf season was in the fall in Illinois for high school. And I played all right, but not that great. I was kind of struggling a little bit. And when the winter rolled around, I was like, told my dad, I played it when I was a young kid, but I was like, I kind of want to play tennis. And our local health club has a huge indoor tennis facility and everything. So I started hitting with a coach. And then started hitting with a group of high school kids and stuff. And in the spring, I ended up just trying out for the varsity tennis team in the spring and ended up making it and played second doubles. So,
and wait, I took so kind of that. You hadn't played tennis prior to this?
I played when I was a kid, but yeah, I kind of started playing in January. And then, just played my way onto the team in March. From January to March, I played at our health club probably every night for 2 or 3 hours. I just fully fell in love with the game, like at the just snap of a finger. And I think it was good for me because I was struggling kind of with my golf game a little bit, and it gave me an outlet for my competitive edge in the winter, and just kind of gave me just a new challenge, something new to learn. And yeah,
tennis is a pretty unique mental challenge, especially when you're playing multi-set matches. Do you think you could take Kuchar?
The only tennis shots I've seen him hit were in that Scratch TV thing I saw the other day of the bleeped out cuss words. And he looked all right. I don't know. I haven't played tennis in a couple of years, but I might be able to take him. I could wear him down a little bit for sure.
All right. I mean, it sounds like his wife, he's probably more dangerous in mixed doubles with his wife. His wife sounds like a menace on the tennis court.
Yeah, she does.
All right. So you graduated OSU, and then started, I'm assuming you went to Q school last year, 2016.
I had some classes to finish up last fall, so I didn't actually do anything. I didn't play Q school, or the only thing I played in was the USGA state team thing that no longer exists. And one of my teammates is former Trap Draw guest Todd Mitchell.
Yeah.
So that's all I played in the fall and finished up. And then January I went to Latin America Q school. That was kind of my first professional event. So, this upcoming fall will be the first time I've played in Web Q school.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't even think about like Web Q school versus Latino America Q school. Like I was thinking it was the same thing, and then you just got bracketed based on where you finished. And backtracking, USGA really messed up getting rid of that state team thing. That was sweet. I liked that. Like that tournament. That was a good little wrinkle. I don't know why they got rid of that.
Oh, it was awesome. I had so much fun. I mean,
where'd you guys play that at?
It was at the Country Club of Birmingham in Birmingham, Alabama. And that place is mint. Yeah. That place is awesome
over there. They got a good little whiskey loop over there. Yeah, that place is sweet there. And then what, Mountain Brook Country Club or Mountain Brook Club right there.
Yeah.
All right. So you went to Latino America Q school. Where was that at?
That was Bogota, Colombia with Pablo.
All right, so was that the plan all along? You're going to finish up these classes at Ohio State and then hop a flight to Bogota and play in Latino America Q school? Or
yeah, pretty much. They had four Q schools. There's one in scenic Sebring, Florida, which is just in the middle of the state, and then there was one in. I forget which part of Mexico exactly it was, but somewhere in Mexico the next week. And then the next week after that, there's one in Bogota, and there's also one in, I think it was Luján, Argentina, down there outside of Buenos Aires. So there's four of them. And I'd heard from some guys that went the previous year that the course in Bogota is a really good golf course. It's called Club Los Lagartos. And
I think you sent me a picture of that one. That's the one you sent me a picture of for the NLU Tracks account.
Yep, exactly. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome golf course. And that's usually the number one rated Q school. So they get more spots.
So
if you're going to get, well, the same amount of spots, but if you're a conditional coming out of that, you have a better chance to get into events.
Okay.
And I heard from people that it would fit my game and that it was just a good spot for me to go. So I went there, and it was the last one, so it gave me a couple more weeks in January to get my game ready to head down there. Okay. So, yeah, I went down there and finished T9 and got full status for the year and then headed back down to the first event that was back in Bogota a couple weeks later.
Okay. So and then at this point, are you setting up home base somewhere? Like, because obviously you're not preparing for, you know, January or February golf up in Illinois or up in Columbus, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of nice how it all worked out. My brother goes to Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, down just south of Fort Myers. So we had kind of set it up all along that he was going to get a place with a extra bedroom. So once January rolled around, I would kind of make my home base down there with him and move in with him. Nice. So yeah, that ended up working out really well.
Down in Southwest Florida, is that Estero or?
Yeah. Fort Myers? Estero.
Okay. Yeah. My wife's from Naples. all right. So then you go down to the 70 Avianca Columbia Open, or I don't know if I should say, is it Setiente or what's that 70?
It's, yes. Setenta, maybe.
Setenta. That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So going down there was just like, describe the Narcos or the PGA Tour Latino America, aka I call it the Narcos Tour. Describe that in one or two words for me, English or Spanish. Just sum it up.
Muy interesante.
So you show up there, and like, what's the field like? Is it just a hodgepodge of you know, kind of young college guys, washed out web tour guys, you know, journeymen from Latin America? Like, what's the scene? Set the scene.
Yeah, it's kind of I was a little surprised. I thought there would be a lot more just out of college guys down there, to be honest. That's a little bit more up here in Canada. Canada kind of gets the whole crowd of 1, 2, 3 years out of college, aged guys. Down there, it was a little bit older of a crowd. There's quite a few guys that kind of play off some web status early in the season. If they're not getting into the first couple web events, they'll come down there and play because they get a certain amount of spots each week. There's a lot. I would say there's 144 guys in each field. Probably 90 to 100, give or take, are Americans each week, and the rest are guys from Latin America. And the guys from Latin America kind of roll with each other.
Yeah.
A lot of the American guys kind of roll with each other. And there's not really, like, there's any tension between the two groups. It's just kind of people stick with, you know, their native language speakers and kind of hang out with their guys. There's quite a few guys down there who their main goal and, you know, the idea of a successful career to them is playing on PGA Tour Latino America. And they're sponsored by a ton of companies. They wear a ton of logos on their shirts. They get paid pretty decent money to, you know, wear the logos and play down there. And that's kind of their final destination. What they think is just playing PGA Tour. Yep, yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of really good players down there. I would say, up on PGA Tour Canada, the field's probably 10 to 15 guys deeper each week with guys who really have a chance to win. But I think the top section of the fields are just as good down there as they are up here. And, you know, there's like, I think my favorite guy that's from down there that I've met so far is, I think he's number 2 on the money list right now.
Losinko.
Losinko. Jose, De Jesus Rodriguez, he goes by El Camarón, which means the shrimp. And he has a staff bag that is white, green, and red, the colors of the Mexican flag where he's from. And it just has a giant shrimp on the side of it. And this guy is just a journeyman. He's just a grinder. He's probably 40 years old. He just stripes his hybrids around and he just grinds. And he won the Avianca Open in Bogota there for the first event and got second in Jamaica, but he's just a really cool dude. And he's kind of the consummate what you would picture when you think of a guy that's been grinding on PGA Tour Latino America for however many years.
So, all right. Oh, God, like you're making you want to hop on a plane and go down and see it. All right. Logistically speaking, so you get down there to Colombia, what's your caddy situation like?
Let's see. That was my dad came down with me for that event.
Okay.
But a lot of guys, you just get a caddy at the course and like, I'll give you my caddy situation in Buenos Aires was just, I showed up to the course, talked to the caddy master, say you need a caddy for the week. You'll be on the range and all of a sudden some guy will come up to you, introduce himself, say I'm your caddy. And this case in Argentina, I think his name, I'm pretty sure it was Raul. I don't really remember because he didn't speak any English, not one word. So we introduced each other to each other and, you know,
that was it.
And he'd ask me like at the end of the round, he'd ask me what time tomorrow. And I'd tell him what time and he'd be there on the putting green waiting for me.
Was he walking off any yardages for you or was it just strictly, he was strictly carrying the bag?
He was pretty much strictly carrying the bag and giving me fist pumps when I made putts and, you know, going, oh, when I would miss putts or hit it, not where we were looking to hit it.
He was kind of a hype guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. And it's funny because they, a lot of times down there when you get local caddies, they care more about your score than you do because they're under the assumption that no matter what you're making, they're getting 10% or 12%, which just is not the case at all. So they're thinking like when you're making a birdie putt, they're doing huge fist pumps on the side of the greens and clapping and smiling and stuff. And like I was playing pretty well in the last round. I was just striping it, had good looks all day. And I putted well, just nothing really went in. And towards the back nine, I started to miss putts on the right edge. And every time I miss a putt, he'd just go, oh, and he'd look at me and go, derecha, derecha. And I'm just getting so pissed off as the round's going on. And I hit this drive left on the par five. And he just looks at me and shakes his head and goes, no, no es bueno. And I took every nerve in my body just to not snap at this guy in the tee box. And I was just trying so hard. But yeah, it was so frustrating because I'm already pissed off and I already know that I just slipped off that putt. And then to have the guy that's carrying my bag just add so much salt to the wound right after is just so infuriating.
So what, all right. So what do you pay the guy like just up front? What do you pay him for, you know, assuming 4 days of work or.
Yeah. Sure well, it's usually
for a practice round.
Yeah. They'll be there for the practice rounds too. And the base fee kind of down there is pretty much $50 around US dollars. And they pretty much accept American money wherever they're at down there. So, and then it's just kind of tip based off what you feel they earned. And I felt at the end of the 4 days, I think I got 11th or 12th place that week. I felt like I gave him a pretty solid tip. I mean, he didn't do anything. Like he just carried my bag the whole time. It's not like he really helped me at all. So but I gave him a little tip or as they call it on their propina. And he counted the money right in front of my face and looked at me and stuck his hand out and was like, mas propina, mas propina. And I was just like, no, I gave you a tip, dude. Like this, I don't have that much cash with me. I can't just reach into my pocket and peel off a couple more bills for you. And he was not happy about it. And so we just debated and broke in Spanish and English to each other for a couple minutes. And he ended up just looking at my Callaway hat that was on my head, just took the hat off my head, put it on, nodded his head yes, and just walked away. And I was like, all right, I guess he just took my hat for the rest of his tip. And so, yeah,
Harry,
so
that was kind of Chad and Harry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I
get this
I need
guy a new hat.
But,
and let's send a few down to Raul as well. So, all right, so as far as setting up your schedule and kind of budgeting and everything, like what do you like? All right. Are you staying at just, are you trying to stay at an American hotel? Or are you trying to just find the cheapest place or is there stuff set up by the tour down there? And then they're shuttling you back and forth from the course. Like what's the word off the course?
So every week that's the one thing that's tough about down there is just, it varies so much every week. Like Bogota, there's a host hotel every week, but Bogota, the host hotel was really nice because it's cheap down there. Mm-hmm. Just the exchange rate is so much in our favor down there. So we were staying at a super nice hotel for $90 a night, I think. Argentina, we were kind of in the middle of nowhere, Argentina, an hour, 10 minutes outside of the city. So we were staying at a hotel by the airport that was the host and it was just okay. But it really wasn't that cheap. It was like 180 for a room. You know, you room with a guy and split that. So,
and then are there guys down there? So you got a lot of kind of post collegiate American guys. Are there guys that are struggling, just A, to adjust to pro golf, and then B, not only that, but like being down in Latin America and everything's a little bit loose and a little bit, you know, just willy nilly down there. I mean, are there guys just going out and getting turned up at night and then missing their tee times, or is everybody pretty good about staying focused?
No, there are definitely there's definitely guys that have a little different systems and a little bit different way they go about things. Some guys will, you know, go out in the middle of the week or go out Thursday, Friday night, even if they, or if they barely make the cut by one shot, and they'll go out Friday night still and just be like, maybe it'll help me this weekend. And they might play real good on Saturday and not great on Sunday. But then there's other guys who, you know, have extremely regimented routines with working out and their practice days and stuff. There's probably just a
wide variety, like a giant disparity between either end of the spectrum down there versus, say, the Web Tour or the PGA Tour.
Yeah. I mean, some guys are down there kind of one foot in the door, one foot out of the door. They're down there to play, but at the same time, they're like, we're in Buenos Aires this week. You know, let's go have fun in Buenos Aires. So, and I could totally see that too. I mean, some of these cities we go to are a pretty fun time, and they're a spot that you might, you know, never visit again.
Yeah.
But it's all across the board. You get guys doing anything and everything, really.
Well, just looking at the schedule too. So you go from, you did the qualifying tournament down there in January, and then you go back down there in February, and then there's not another tournament till March down in Buenos Aires. And then the next week you go to Guatemala.
Yeah, that was that was a tough travel on there. I think, so we go from Buenos Aires.
I mean, that's a long Guatemala. Yeah, that's a long way, right? That's like going from one end of the US to the other. I mean,
oh, it's even way further than that. I think the flight I got, so we finished Sunday, Buenos Aires, played pretty solid, get showered at the course, get ready. Just somehow we packed three of us, and we all split a rental car for the week that I could, by the way, some of the rental cars down there, we get spots and they're all stick shift. So if you don't know how to drive stick, you better have a friend that knows how to drive stick or you're screwed. So luckily I had a buddy that knew how to drive stick. So we all split a rental car. We somehow get all of our stuff packed into this little rental car. And our rental car maybe got up to 80 miles an hour, but once it got to 81 miles an hour, I mean, it would shake and you didn't know if you were going to make it much further. So we coasted at about 78.
Probably the whole time. A hatchback or something.
Oh yeah. It was just a real small little car. So we somehow get all our stuff in there, and I've got like a 1 a.m. flight to Mexico City from Buenos Aires. But a lot of other guys were on a different flight. They were on a little earlier flight. Some guys flew through Bogota. Some guys went back to Miami, connected in Miami over to Guatemala City. But I'm there before, like 4.5 hours before my flight. So I get there and the airline I was flying, Air Mexico or Aero Mexico, wasn't even open yet. So I got to just sit in this outside in this main area of the airport for 2 hours while my ticket counter opens. That opens, I finally get all checked in, and then I have a 10.5 hour red eye to Mexico City. Get to Mexico City, have like a 3 hour layover, have to go back through customs, recheck in and everything. And it's a 2.5 hour flight to Guatemala City from Mexico City. Get into Guatemala City. And then it's an 1.5 hour shuttle ride from Guatemala City to where our resort was at La Reunion. And there was one other guy that had the same itinerary as I did, so we kind of stuck together the whole time. And I told him we were flying to Mexico City, but somehow our flight to Guatemala City was getting there like an hour or two before everybody else. So we were kind of the first guys there. And I said to him when we were approaching the resort in the shuttle, it's like, I feel like I'm on an episode of The Amazing Race right now. Like the cameras are following us and we're the first team that's getting there. And we kind of know we're going to be the first team and everyone else is lagging behind us a little. We're in these little small roads of Guatemala in this shuttle van that probably isn't going to make it there. If we get there, I'm going to be surprised. And, you know, there's just horses pulling carriages of fresh produce and stuff on the sides of the roads. I mean, it was just a wild experience.
Is this the one probably... that's on the side of like a volcano too?
Yep. And then we get there and there's just like a volcano erupting in the background. Yeah. I'm like, this is, I can't believe I'm here to play a golf tournament right now. I feel like I'm just in like a movie or a TV show. It's pretty wild.
And what are the courses like? Are the courses, I mean, are they, is it like a wide variety of resort courses and then old school courses that are really kind of architecturally sound, or is it kind of one or the other, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest advantages down there is you just kind of learn to adapt to everything. We've played a bunch of different types of courses. We've played a few super resorty courses. We've played a couple, like Cordoba Argentina was just kind of a classical country club with good architecture, really good bunkering, pretty tight. We've played a couple courses that were a little more wide open and easier. So, and we've played on all different types of grasses. We've played on bent greens, past palum, Poe, Bermuda. I mean, we play on all different types of stuff, and all the fairways and roughs are different too. So you just kind of learn. I mean, you might go from bent in Guatemala 1 week to, you know, I think it was past Palom in Honduras, where I actually didn't play Honduras, but the guys said it was just really sticky past Palom there. So you just are always kind of learning how to adapt on the fly and, you know, get your game ready for whatever's going to face that week.
So did you skip Honduras because just schedule? Like you're not coming back down there till mid-April? You got April?
Yeah. The season was just getting started out. It was Buenos Aires, Guatemala, where the whole tournament got canceled in Guatemala, but,
just rain or what?
Just
they got the
greens too fast and it was super windy, blowing like 30 miles an hour every day coming from the volcano. So the balls just weren't staying on the greens. It was 80 degrees and perfectly sunny every day, and we just couldn't play because the course was unplayable, which was weird. I've never been at a tournament that's gotten canceled for that. But
it sounds like you're just prepping for the Bahamas next year on the club tour. That was the
exactly
best.
Exactly. But yeah, it's just I just wasn't sure I wanted to do 3 weeks in a row at that point. I just thought start of the season it might have been better for me just to do the two and then go back and get my game ready again and just
so then you came
I
back
had
down.
Never yeah I just didn't really want to play just for scheduling reasons.
So then you came back down to Argentina. Did you feel refreshed?
Like
Cordoba.
Yeah, that was I felt refreshed. That was ironically my worst event of the whole season, but that was a pretty cool spot because Angel Cabrera usually plays every year, but has bad status on the PGA Tour this year, so he got into the shell that week, so he didn't come down because that's his hometown where he grew up. But Eduardo Romero played; he was there.
Then you go back up to Costa Rica. How was that?
Yeah, which was a few weeks later. Costa Rica was really cool.
What do you do in between if there's 2 weeks between?
I just go back to the States.
Okay.
Unless there's two events back to back weeks, we're going back to the States. Between events. I mean, honestly, you can't, sometimes when you're down there, you can't get back to the States fast enough. And you're looking forward to getting some, you know, quality meals in your body.
And do you have kind of a roll dog down there? Like, do you have somebody that you've kind of either went down there with or somebody that you've kind of made fast friends with since being on the tour?
Yeah. I've had a few guys that I've met down there that I've roomed with a couple times. Everyone kind of flies out of Miami and we all kind of end up getting on the same flights. out of Miami, because Miami's kind of the hub. You can fly anywhere to Latin America from there.
Okay. Yeah, so you're spending a lot of time on Alligator Alley.
Just back and forth. Exactly.
That sucks. All right.
Yeah, it does suck.
All right, so then you go back to the States for a bit. Are you playing any tournaments in the States? Or are you doing anything, or just kind of practicing and keeping your game sharp at the home course?
Yeah, just practicing, working on some stuff. One of the times, I think it was... maybe it was before, or maybe it was after Argentina. I went up and saw my coach is in Chicago, but there's a couple of us that are pros and we're all around the same age. And one of the guys lives in Pinehurst. So we all kind of met up in Pinehurst for a couple days to I'll do some work, and did a web seminar with Scott Fawcett, kind of learned the whole decade thing, which is pretty cool. He's an awesome guy. So
yeah,
did that. And
wow. I mean, every time DJ and I play, we're like, Fawcett. Like, we're just going to Fawcett this par four, or this, you know, keeping it.
I always say just dispersions. I'm just out there controlling dispersions.
So I guess that leads me to my next thing then. So you go back down, you play beginning of June in Quito, Ecuador, and then you win the following week in Puerto Rico. That can't be a coincidence that you had just worked with Fawcett.
No, and it was I didn't. Quito was another one I took off too. Moved.
Okay.
I moved back to Chicago for the summer, in May there after Costa Rica, and just decided that I wasn't going to play Ecuador because I just wanted to work on a few things and kind of. I've always done where I've just kind of throughout my whole career. Had a setup with my coach where we train for a couple weeks and then we'll play a little bit and then have little training segments and then play a few events. So I was just trying to stick to that schedule. And so we did that, decided to take Ecuador off. And then I went down to DR. My dad came down with me and
DR, yeah, that's when I started. I said Puerto Rico, DR. I saw Puerto Plata. That's
where yeah, I was like, yeah. No, I actually told someone before I was going on there, like, yeah, we're going to Puerto Rico. And that confused me for a couple of weeks too. But yeah, I went down there and was just controlling my shotgun patterns.
Love it. All right. So did something feel different that week, or were you just dialed in and confident and it happened? And then.
Yeah, I felt like my game was kind of trending in the right direction. I was starting to feel good and just kind of went out that first round in some pretty steady wind and kind of blacked out for a couple hours there and shot 10 under that first round. And then once I shot that the first round, I kind of knew my game was in a special place that week. And I've always had a knack during my career when I know my game's in a real good place and I feel like I have my A game. I've usually won most of the times. And I feel like that's definitely something that I've always been able to do is capitalize when I'm playing really well. So yeah, I kind of, after that first round, knew that I had my stuff that week and never let my foot off the gas, just kept going.
So 10 under, do you have any eagles or was it just straight birdies?
It was just straight 10 birdies and 8 pars. It was,
yeah, that's pretty, bananas, pretty fun. Dude. And then how'd you follow it up? Second, like, did you feel any pressure to chase it or were you just kind of, like you said, just totally in the zone and taking it a whole lot of time?
Yeah, I was totally in the zone. I think the first hole, my second round after the 10 under, I eagled my first hole the second round. So once I eagled that hole and was like 12 under through 19 holes, I was like, okay, this is
you're playing with house money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just could kind of, and I think I made a really bad, I can't remember if it was bogey or double on the back. And then I birdied 15, 16, 17, that second round to turn what was going to be just shooting 1 under and 4 under. And then once I did that, it was kind of easy just to roll with it during the weekend and hold my lead.
Awesome. And all right. So how'd you celebrate that one? You're down in the Dominican. You stay down there an extra day or you hop a flight back to Miami or go over to Jamaica and celebrate over there at the next event.
There wasn't a whole lot of celebrating, unfortunately. I had like a 4 a.m. taxi ride to the airport that was an hour and a half away the next morning. So just, I celebrated basically by hanging out in my hotel room by myself and packing up my suitcase. But it was fun just responding to everyone's calls and texts and everything. And then it was cool because my dad flew back to Chicago from there, and my brother flew down from Chicago to Jamaica for the next week to caddy for me. So I was able, the way I got to Jamaica was flew back to Miami and then was able to get my brother ticketed to be on the same flight from Miami to Jamaica with me. So I saw him in the airport, and which was nice to be down there the first couple of days in Jamaica, kind of celebrating the win with my brother.
The Caribbean's crazy. See, instead of flying from Dominican Republic to Jamaica, which is probably a few hundred miles away, it's fly back to Miami.
Yep.
And then, God, that's nuts.
Yeah, that's the one thing guys like to lament quite a bit down there about is the travel. Just how we were in Argentina and went all the way to Guatemala, and then a couple weeks later we had a standalone event in another part of Argentina, which just sometimes, you know, it's how the tournaments work with the sponsors and dates for resorts and everything. So that's, I don't even, can't even begin to imagine what goes into all that with the schedule planning. But sometimes us players would like to think it could be a little easier with, you know, maybe if we're flying 9 hours from Miami to Argentina that we could have a few in a row down there. But, you know, that's a can of worms that I don't even want to begin to open.
So looking at it moving forward, so you kind of transition up to the Canadian tour. Is there a ton of overlap between the two tours? Like, is there a significant group of you guys that kind of plays down there in the spring and then transitions to Canada in the summer?
I think that's what they kind of set it up to be. This year, the schedules overlapped quite a bit. So there's not as much of it, but I had never really planned on coming to play up here at all. But once I got my win and then played well in Jamaica, I was high enough on the money list where we have a few spots week up here now from Orden de Merito is what they also call it down there. But we have a few spots each week in Canada for guys that are, I think there's three spots at every event in the summer for guys that are top 20 on the Latin America money list.
So technically the Canadian tour is a step above the Latino America?
No, they're on the same level because we get the same amount of web cards and 10 guys go straight to final stage too. It's just that they offer a little layout, like they just give a couple spots to Latin guys up here while we're in the off season to play want to.
Okay.
So I'd never planned on playing up here, but when I had the opportunity, I figured it was better to come up here and to play in some full 4-round events than just diddling around at Monday qualifiers and stuff that, you know, are just a lot different than playing in full field 4-round events where you know, get some good work in and can just keep playing. I was playing well too. So the idea was just, I just kind of want to keep playing.
So was last week your first one in Thunder Bay, or do you played in a couple before that?
No, last week was the last one in Thunder Bay. I think there was one the week before in Winnipeg, but I had something back home that I already committed to doing that week, so didn't play in that one.
Cool. So you're in Montreal. So feel like the field's a little bit deeper, but you also feel like you're a little bit more at home being back in North America. Granted, they don't, you know, it's more French speaking up in Quebec, but you feel a little bit more at home, a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the off the course for sure. It's not even close, really. It's pretty cool up here. I really like Canada, what I've seen so far. And honestly, the course too, it's just kind of a tree lined parkland course up here. Mm-hmm. It feels kind of a lot like something I'd get in Chicago. So I love the golf course. And the same with last week too. Just kind of beautiful parkland. There was a huge river that kind of flowed by one of the holes, and just, it feels a lot like somewhere you'd be playing in the Midwest, you know, not like it is in Costa Rica where there's monkeys and lemurs instead of squirrels. Yeah.
So big takeaway for me, just being in Canada, was like how rabid Canadians are for golf too. I mean, they're huge, very knowledgeable golf fans. Like, it's crazy. That was like a big thing. I played out in British Columbia last summer, and it was like, whoa, these guys, their season's a lot shorter, but they probably play more golf per available day than most Americans.
I mean, last week was unbelievable in Thunder Bay. First of all, for a city that only has 100,000 people, how many volunteers there were for the event? I think I heard that there was almost like 500 volunteers for the event last week, just from, there was a live score with every single group, spotters on every hole. I mean, just people everywhere. There was a grandstand around the 18th hole, and the last day there was just tons and tons of people out there, which is really cool to see. And anywhere we went to dinner, it was, you know, me and a couple of my friends, the waitress or people at the restaurant would ask us, like, you guys here playing in the Stahl Foundation Open? And everyone knew exactly what was going on, which was pretty cool because, you know, at our level right now, I mean, everyone's played in some tournaments that are like that, but you don't get that every week where the event you're playing in, the whole city knows what's going on. Yeah. And it's kind of the show in town. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you, I guess, first of all, like what's the plan the rest of the year? Would you, cause I know there's a little bit of overlap in August as well. Will you stay in Canada? Will you go back to Latin America? Will you try to kind of parlay some of this status into web tour starts? How does that work?
Yeah. So the plan was just kind of play these 2 weeks just to play in some events. And if I played well, see what happens. It was looking pretty good last week until I just went full eject on the back nine, unfortunately. But I was going to, I mean, even if I play well this week and am doing pretty well on, what do they call it up here, the five or something, if I'm doing pretty well on that, I might take the first few Latin events off and finish the season up here just to see if I could kind of have two chances at the web card through the two tours. But and honestly, then, I'm just going to play this week and then probably go back to Latin America.
How many spots are there available to, like, for full web status from the web or from Canadian and Latino America?
There's the top five on each tour get web cards.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's not full status though. I mean, you're conditional members. I don't know how much you'll get into. Yeah. Guys go to Q school still, even if they get top five, just to try to improve their number. So I'm not exactly sure how all that breaks down. I mean, some guys out here might have spreadsheets and stuff to figure that stuff out, but I don't really know. I'm too young in the game to know exactly how all those conditional numbers and all that stuff works. But yeah, it's five, and then the top 10 on each tour get to go straight to final stage. Top 20 on each tour get to go to second stage Q school.
Okay.
And I think it's maybe top 30 get to go straight to first stage. So it's nice. You know, if you can go straight to final stage, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'm just looking at the schedule too. Jockey Club, November 16th to 19th. I believe that's an Alistair McKenzie down there in Buenos Aires.
Yeah, it is. I've been looking forward to that one for all right, a while. So you got that I've heard that place is sweet.
You got that one circled on the schedule?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that should be a – because the last course we played in Argentina was – or the one in Buenos Aires was fine, but it was nothing really to write home about. And I know a couple guys that didn't make the cut went out to play the Jockey Club in the weekend. They said that place is just awesome. So we're all looking forward to that one.
Oh, okay. All right. And then there's a home event, Miami Shell Championship in November, November after Thanksgiving.
The Tour Championship comes back to what pretty much is Latin America, Miami. So that'll be cool, at least to only have to drive across Alligator Alley, not get on a plane after.
Yeah. All right. So two final questions for you. What's if you've learned one thing this year, what was it? Or just thus far this year, what have you learned? What was the biggest takeaway from the first half of your season? On course or off. Like, it could be like, hey, bring your own toilet paper somewhere.
I think on course, I mean, the big thing that's pretty easy to learn down there is you just have to just be so patient with everything. You might get off a flight and your body's just feeling horrible for 2 days. So, you know, you might only putt and for a couple of days before the event and then just get one practice round in, or, you know, you just always kind of have to be adjusting to, you know, what that week's giving you. 'Cause it's not like you're traveling around up here where you know exactly the accommodations you're going to be in every night and the food you're going to get and stuff. So you're always just kind of going with the flow and learning how to just kind of easily adapt to everything. And I would say off the course, you just have to bring a lot of food down there. Get some guys, the pantries they travel with is impressive. I mean, jars of peanut butter, full loaves of bread. I mean, everything. Guys will bring down
like self-sufficient, like just totally off the grid almost.
Yeah. Just for encore stuff, especially. I mean, you just can't go to a place in some of these countries and expect to get like energy bars to put in your bag. That just doesn't exist. So, and a lot of these places have never even heard of peanut butter, and that's a lot of guys swear by peanut butter on the golf course. So yeah, guys will just bring almost just a full carry-on bag that's just stocked with food.
God, there's a lot of variables down there, man. A lot of variables.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. So goal for the rest of the season is just lock up that web card, get deep in Los Cinco and lock up that web card for next year.
Yep. That's the plan. I've got my eyes set on Los Cinco right now, and just the purses are pretty top heavy down there. So I've got a pretty good advantage right now with having a first place and a fourth place finish. It's really tough to catch guys on the Ordin, the Merito down there when you're not winning events. So just keep playing solid for the second half of the season, and I should put myself in a pretty good position for hopefully working my way up next season.
Cool, man. Well, shit, we'll be rooting for you. I know I got you starred. I go over and check the Latino America leaderboards, you know, every week, and it's a good. I mean, there's it's crazy how many names you see on the web tour. Like, I'm just looking at the list of past winners, you know, winners from last year on the Latino America tour, and I mean, Kent Bull, he's playing in the British Open this week. Nate Lashley, he's got his tour card essentially locked up for next year. He won twice last year. I mean, you got guys that are making waves on the big scene. So you're not far off the main stage
here. Yeah. You know, and another guy that I know pretty well, Adam Shank, was in Latin America 2 years ago. Yeah. And I think he's got top five at like five of the last six web events or something.
Yeah.
And has his card locked up pretty easy for next year. So it's cool to see guys that were just down here recently and what they've been able to do with their status, and it's kind of fun to follow these tournaments online because you're never sure what you're going to see. A guy I was playing with in Jamaica made a double eagle on the last hole Friday to make the cut, which was probably the craziest thing I've ever seen. And the other guy I was playing with hit three drives out of play on the last two holes and played the two holes one over par, which was probably equally as impressive as the
that might be more as impressive.
Yeah, albatross. I mean, it was the most wild two holes of golf I've ever been a part of. Granted, they're both par fives, which lend themselves to some wild play every once in a while. But yeah, it was my buddy JD, who played at Penn State. He was close to making the cut and knew he probably needed eagle and just hold out on the par five for the walk off albatross to make the cut by one, which is pretty sweet to see.
And he saw it go in, knew it went in. It was.
Oh yeah, it was pretty outrageous. We all saw the whole thing.
Damn, dude. That's all right. Last question. Where do you play at in Chicago?
I was pretty lucky. I grew up playing at Medina Country Club.
Oh, nice. Okay. You have
So plenty. Been there my whole life. The every day I play, I just get sad when I get on the 17th hole where all of the United States dreams crumbled in 2012. But yeah, it's a good spot, and I'm lucky to have a great course like that to grow up on.
Nice. Yeah. Shout out to Potsy, right?
Yeah, yep.
J.R. Potsy. Twitter. What's up, guys? All right. Last thing. Who's your open pick?
Man, me and my brother were talking about this today. It's just that it's tough for me to say anyone, because I mean, there's the obvious answers that I could give you, like Spieth or whatever. That's boring, but I mean, I guess he's kind of an obvious one too. But Paul Casey would be pretty. He
Okay.
just hits it so solid, and if it gets super windy, like they're saying on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I can just see him just kind of boringly plodding his way around and doing it. I know you guys were you've been joking around about Westwood a little bit too. I'd love to see that. He could play really well. We'll just see what happens Sunday, but
Some would argue that Westwood or that Casey is like the new age Westwood.
I could see that. It's ex extremely valid. I don't. You think McRib's gonna make the cut? What do you think's going on with him?
I think he's gonna make the cut just because he's so, I think this place puts a premium on hitting greens. He's not hitting it close on the greens, but he's still hitting greens. So
Yeah.
I think he'll make the cut, but I just don't think he's putting well enough and hitting his wedges well enough to make a run at it. But hey, I mean, he's McRib, he could find a spark real quick. But I think Spieth, Leishman, and Streber, man, those are my three. I'm riding with them. And Ricky, I think I officially picked Ricky, so I gotta throw him in there. But
Yeah, he's pretty hard to go against in any open because he can,
yeah.
I mean, play in any type of weather, especially wind.
But the fact that Bones picked Spieth just speaks volumes to me. This feels very Spieth-y. So,
Yeah, I am extremely excited for Bones to be on the course. I think that's going to be unreal.
so good, so good. So, all right, man. Well, we will keep the folks posted about how you play up in Montreal and as you go about it through the rest of the season. But appreciate you joining us, TK.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. It was awesome.
How nice is this property?